Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Dr. Lawyer, idiot chief. For my life with songs of grief, with the yellow fear and fearless eyes.
Welcome to Court Appointed, 2D's perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer, dude, and a judge.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl, and I am just a dude.
Well, I have learned a valuable lesson today in the courtroom, something that I did not pick up in my prior 18 years as a practicing attorney.
Make sure your fly is up before you address the jury?
Nope. Pick that up in year four.
Oh, okay, good for you. Too bad for the people the first 3 years. So, although, you know, I don't know, it always pays to advertise, so I don't know.
I had a telephonic hearing this morning before lunch, so I had that. It was a Skype hearing. All things went well, and I had to do a little bit of work to get ready for my next hearing, which was at 1 o'clock today, and that was actually at the courthouse in person. So this is my first time making it back to the Cabell County Courthouse. I'd been to the Wayne County Courthouse before since the whole pandemic, but this is my first time back at my home courthouse.
And you didn't forget pants altogether, did you?
No, I had pants on. Okay, they were a little bit tighter than they used to be, I think.
Oh, but, you're gaining that COVID-19.
Something like that. It might be a COVID 1.9, but I still feel it because I was on the verge of busting out of those things anyway.
Yeah, I'm on about a COVID 30.
So I decided I would, the hearing was at 1, and I decided about 12:15, I hadn't eaten yet, I'd walk over and grab a sandwich real quick at the market, our little outdoor seating place there on the way to the courthouse. And so I got a sandwich, and I just got a Philly cheesesteak. I didn't think anything of it. And so I ate it, and then I went to the courtroom and or went to the courthouse and slipped my mask on and then went through the metal detector and went upstairs. And all of a sudden I realized that had onions and peppers on it. And I was going to be breathing my own onion and pepper breath through my mask.
Oh my God. You gas yourself
for the next hour.
The noxious fumes would gather underneath there. And counselor, what happened? He passed out. I don't know. He mustard gas.
I literally, yeah, it was like mustard, mayo, onion, and tomato gas. But yeah, I actually gassed myself during that hearing. It was brutal. I had never even thought about that, but it's a new normal, I guess.
So you learned a lesson about that, huh?
Yeah.
Be aware of what you eat before going to a courtroom and having to wear a mask.
Yes, absolutely. Which also made me think, does my breath smell this bad normally after lunch? Mm.
Oh, man. Take some Altoids with you or something.
Yeah, I think it was just exacerbated by the fact I was wearing a mask. It was just kind of reverberating in my nasal passages.
That's kind of like the saying about if you break wind in church, you have to sit in your own pew.
I remember when I was younger one time, and I think it was either you or my brother Chris, I can't remember, but one of you had been passing gas a lot, and I was in the room with you all, and Mom came in and said, "Michael, get out of here. They stink," or "he stinks."
she actually said, "It's unhealthy in here."
Was that you?
Yeah, I think I was there. I'm not sure who it was. I'm not going to claim who it was, but your mother did have a super nose, though.
That is true.
You know, you've heard them talk about with this COVID-19, you've heard them talk about super spreaders.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she was a super smeller. She would always, you'd come out of the bathroom, and as soon as you came walking out, she'd run to the door and start sniffing. It was like, what do you expect is going to happen? You're looking for trouble there.
Light a match in there.
I was afraid it would blow up.
Oh yeah, Mom always did pick on you and your bodily smells.
Yeah, I know that she did have a way of doing that, and she was down at the level, though, as short as she was, where she incurred quite a few.
Maybe that was it. It wasn't that she was such a super smeller, but just the smells hovered at her height.
She was in the zone. Yeah. Hey, well, I had the occasion to feel very vindicated this past weekend.
That's good.
The you know, as this during May, I'm not sure what the occasion was or why May was specified or something, but anyway, Sirius changed over one of their channels to where it's all Led Zeppelin for the month.
Nothing
but Led Zeppelin 24/7. So you can hear every version of every song they have ever done live or in the studio.
And that's during May?
Yeah, for the whole month of May, and it goes back to deep cuts in June.
So I still have a few days where I can take advantage of that, maybe.
Yeah, so I've been listening to this all through May in the office and in the car, and rebuilding my Led Zeppelin, you know, repertoire. Mm-hmm. And you know, I have made the statement on here before that I felt the best Led Zeppelin song ever was Kashmir. Mm-hmm. That was it. You know, most people would say Stairway to Heaven, but I said, no, I think it's Kashmir. Well, they did a top 50 Led Zeppelin songs with everybody listening to the channel voting.
Yeah.
So they went and did the top 50. So I listened anxiously as they got to the final few. And sure enough, Stairway to Heaven was number 2 and Kashmir was number 1. So nice. I felt vindicated. Everybody voted just like I said. Kashmir, the greatest Led Zeppelin song ever.
You know what I think my favorite Led Zeppelin song is? And it's kind of changed over the years. I go through different phases where I like one more than the other and whatnot. But I would say the one I've had most recently for my adult life is Galley's Pole. I love Swinging from the Galley's Pole. It's such a rocking song.
That's a good one.
That would make the list?
Oh yeah. Pretty much all the ones you heard of, they made the list somewhere in the top 50.
Was Galley's Pole up there high on the list, or was it more of a deeper cut?
I don't really remember, because it wasn't like I sat there and listened to 50 straight songs. So I picked it up bits and pieces here and there, but I was just fortunate to have queued in right as they got down to like number 3 or something like that.
I was telling the boys not too long ago about my experience at the Keith Albee going to a Led Zeppelin laser light show when I was in high school.
Yeah.
It was very trippy.
I always thought it was funny that Hey Hey My My was one of my favorite songs of theirs, and it was actually never released on an album. It was the B-side to another record, and they just released it on there because they had to have something else on there. And that was one of my favorite songs they ever did. And then there was also a drum solo by John Bonham, and that's really good to listen to, and it's no words or anything. It's just strictly a drum solo from start to finish.
I'll have to check that out. I might actually listen to that on Sirius FM, too, or Sirius XM.
Yeah, it was good. I've enjoyed this month. I'll be sorry to see it go.
You're like one of two people that have enjoyed May of 2020.
Yeah, as long as I survive my surgery, then I'll be able to hear the rest of it.
Well, we're not talking about Led Zeppelin the rest of the episode, although that would probably be a pretty interesting topic of discussion for us. Maybe not you, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, I could talk about it for a while. Yeah, but it wouldn't be for them, is what you meant, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because this isn't Led Zeppelin court appointed.
No, this is a special Led Zeppelin episode of court appointed. We're about to get the lead out.
This is unleaded. This is the unleaded version.
The topic today is something that is far less rocking than Led Zeppelin or rock and roll. It has to do with insurance and subrogation, indemnity, and liens. How's that for a letdown?
Wow.
From rock and roll to insurance.
It's a good thing we talked about Led Zeppelin just so we had something.
Oh, so do you have any idea what subrogation is?
I thought it had something to do with S&M, but I'm going to guess that I'm wrong, that because I don't think there's any contracts drawn up during S&M other than just a safe word.
Are you looking at strangulation? I'm trying to extrapolate what you might be mistaking subrogation for.
You know, when somebody's wearing like the leather suit and the leather face mask has a whip and that kind of stuff, don't you subrogate the other person or something?
Subjugate?
Oh, well, maybe that's what it is. I thought you subjugate a verb.
Well, good thing this is a family podcast. So we're going to that. Subrogation is a term which describes the legal right that is held by an insurance carrier to legally pursue a third party that caused an insurance loss to the insured. This is done so that the insurance company recover the amount of the claim paid by the insurance carrier to the insured for a loss. So, to give you an example of this, if you are involved in an automobile accident and you use your Blue Cross Blue Shield to get medical payment for your medical coverage, so you go to the doctor and Blue Cross Blue Shield pays it, and then you end up suing the person who hit you, then Blue Cross would have a subrogation interest in any recovery that you have. So, say you have $10,000 in medical bills that from your accident, and then you sue the person who hit you, and you reach some sort of settlement, say for $100,000. Well, at that point, $10,000 of that would be claimed by the medical provider because they get to be made whole for that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see. Because you know, otherwise, you got the same money for the same thing twice.
Yeah. And so whenever an insurance company does this, they are kind of stepping into the shoes of the policyholder. So they have the same rights as the policyholder, and they have basically all the same rights and legal standing when they are trying to sue for it. And if the insured party does not have the legal standing to sue the third party, the insurer will also be able to pursue a lawsuit as a result. So it's they don't get some extra ability from it either. So it's kind of an interesting concept, and a lot of people don't really think about it whenever you talk about automobile accidents and things like that. But it is a big industry, actually, trying to recover these medical liens and things like that.
So instead of being in good hands, you're in good shoes.
Yeah, that kind of works, I guess. Now, the other interesting thing is that when there are multiple insurance companies, too, if there's multiple policies out there which might apply, then the different insurance companies have different subrogation interests against each other's policies. And that's where it can get really confusing.
So multiple ones and they're all battling for the same dollars.
Pretty much. Most cases, the insurance company pays its insured's claim for the losses directly, and then they go to seek reimbursement from whatever other party they can or whatever insurance company they can. The insured client receives their payment for their losses pretty promptly, and then the insurance company goes out to try to recover their losses to make themselves whole again. So these can come in the form of different things. It can be where an insurance company pays out to somebody directly, or it can be where an insurance company has to pay an interest out to a different company as well.
Okay.
So it can kind of flow different ways for insurance companies, because one insurance company can have a subrogation interest against another insurance company.
that makes sense. It's kind of like, and I think they changed this, but it used to be like say that somebody runs into the back of you, you're stopped at a stop sign, and somebody smashes into the back of you and knocks you into the car in front of you. It used to be that even though it wasn't your fault, you got hit from behind and you hit the guy, ran into the guy in front of you, your insurance still had to cover their car, and then you had to recover all that from the first guy. Now they've changed that, and they pretty much, if that guy caused the whole thing, then he pays the whole thing.
Yeah, unless there was some other reason interceding as to why you hit that other car. You know, like, for example, if you got hit from behind, and once you were lurching forward, you cut the wheel to the right to try to move, and you ran into the other car because you turned the wheel.
Yeah.
Like, you can make an argument there, like, okay, well, you did something else to hit this other car.
But if it's clear cut that wasn't what happened, one guy, you know, hit one car and knocked it into the other car, then instead of having to go through all the different insurances, you just go against the one insurance.
Exactly. Now, the thing, too, is most insurance policies, actually, I would say probably all insurance policies, have documentation somewhere in there which says that they have the right to pursue subrogation liens on your behalf to recover their losses too. So that's almost guaranteed to be covered in your insurance policy too.
Does the insurance company ever encourage you to sue somebody or something so you can get money and pay them back?
No, they don't ever, I think, encourage you. Sometimes they will sue on your behalf.
Okay. I guess that's the same thing in a way.
Yeah. But that's usually if you're not pursuing the other person.
Yeah. I mean, like if they ran into you and you just collected from your insurance company and then you said, you should sue them and get all our money back. You say, I'm not interested. Thank you.
Yeah. One instance is where, this is kind of a different thing too, is that say you are driving and then somebody hits your car and totals your car out, and then your insurance company pays you for your car, then they go ahead and sue the other insurance company for the accident because it's their insurance fault, and they recover the full amount. Well, the insurance company would actually have to pay your deductible too, because that was part of the loss you incurred from the accident.
Sure, yeah.
Because otherwise you'd be out the deductible. So they can recover your deductible for you too. So
that's good. They get you on that deductible.
Oh, always. The other sector where it kind of comes in too, like I said, was with medical insurance, medical providers as well, because they will have subrogation interests and medical liens against any kind of recovery too. And that's always an important part of any kind of settlement that you might enter into. If you are a person who is injured, your attorney will find out what these liens are, and then oftentimes will try to negotiate them down for you so you don't have to pay the full amount, dollar for dollar, as to what your medical expenses are.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll do that a lot of times because sometimes the medical costs might be a little high. Go figure.
They're always high, believe me. It's always more than what you think it's going to be.
There's one interesting thing too. Sometimes whenever cases don't have enough money to cover all the medical bills, what they will do is they will reduce their medical bills proportionately to what the attorney recovers too. So for example, if an attorney takes a 33% fee as their fee to represent the person in that case, there are some states that follow the rule that say the medical provider has to reduce their bill to 33%.
Hmm. So that the person still gets their money back for their injury and he's not losing half of it to the lawyer, huh?
Well, half of it to the lawyer and then, the rest of it to the medical bills. Because if you do that and you allow these liens to be recovered dollar for dollar when there's not enough money, then there is no incentive to anybody to want to try to pursue these cases to begin with.
Right.
Why would you want to do it? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Now, another thing that can happen too, which is a very important piece of the puzzle whenever you have settlements and whatnot, is what's called a waiver of subrogation. And that is a contractual provision where an insured can waive the right of their insurance carrier to recover the loss against somebody else. And oftentimes, insurance companies use that as a negotiating tactic whenever they're trying to settle cases back and forth. They'll say, well, you know what? We'll settle it for this, but we'll go ahead and waive any subrogation interest, meaning, that you can get the full amount back.
Hmm. Well, I'm sure that they would only do that if it was going to benefit them, though.
Well, it benefits. There's a certain amount of benefit for an insurance company to have a case closed, too. Insurance companies don't want to have a lot of open claims. They would rather close them out and deal with them and kind of extinguish any further exposure in the case.
Well, so, not only that, a lot of times they have attorneys involved in it. So the more it drags out, the more their fees go up. So there's probably this sweet spot in there where if we can settle it in X number of days for this amount, we actually come out ahead, even if it doesn't look like it.
That is definitely true. And there have been some cases I've been involved in where the insurance company has just really kind of dropped the ball trying to settle these cases where they could have settled it out at the beginning, probably pretty low, but unfortunately they haven't done that. And then what happens is the case kind of grows and you can discover more and more loss the person has, and the case can get better for the plaintiff and the insurance company ends up paying more. So it's always good if you're an insurance company, if you can adjust the case properly, like look at it properly, figure out what your exposure is, and then try to settle it for a certain portion of that. That's always the preferred way to do it.
Yeah, like they might have a hidden injury somewhere, like an eggshell skull.
Yeah. Now, this kind of goes outside the spectrum of what I was talking about, but it's kind of a nice tie-in when I'm talking about insurance companies and adjusting claims and whatnot. There's a thing called bad faith. And bad faith is a concept that when presented with a valid insurance claim, that the insurance company doesn't act appropriately with it. They act in bad faith. And there's different kinds of bad faith. There's first-party bad faith and third-party bad faith. First-party bad faith is when you're suing your own insurance company for their own breach
screwing
of
you
duty.
Over.
Yeah, screwing you. And
duty.
Yeah. And third-party bad faith is where, say, you hit me and I file a claim with your insurance company and I think they're not acting in good faith, so I try to sue them for bad faith. That would be a third-party bad faith because that's not my insurance company, that's your insurance company, so I'm a third party to them.
Was there any second party, or did we just skip that number?
Well, I don't know. I guess there might be a second party bad faith, but I've never actually thought about it. You're asking the questions that matter, Tommy.
Well, there's a first and a third. I just wondered how we skipped the second. I don't even know who the second party is. That's a lawyer language. The party to the first party that was subjugated to the second party shall be in charge of the third party.
Yeah, I think the second party would probably be the insurance company themselves, so they would have to sue themselves for their own bad faith, which probably wouldn't happen.
I am my own grandpa.
Now, the interesting thing is a lot of states have done away with third-party bad faith. For example, West Virginia no longer has third-party bad faith. So you can present a claim, and they can deny it unreasonably, and it doesn't matter for the most part.
That was when they were trying to clear some of the – we were known as a judicial hellhole, and they were trying to make it more business-friendly, I would guess.
That's right.
So they did away with that, so trying to help it out. So, you know, it's probably like everything else they do. 50% of the people, you know, improved because of it, and the other 50 lost because of it.
Yep. Now, to get kind of back onto the tangent of settlements and subrogation and whatnot, I did say that medical providers can have medical liens and provide it. And before you go to any kind of settlement or anything like that, those numbers have to be figured out exactly what they are, because those have to be satisfied before the plaintiff can get any kind of disbursement from the funds for their settlement.
Oh, I thought you meant like they would like have a lien on your artificial leg, and if you didn't pay the bill, then they could take your leg, and then you would have a lien.
Like an actual lien to the side?
Yeah.
Like a gangster lien?
Like an eye lien.
No, I don't think so. Eileen, huh?
Yeah.
And some medical providers, whenever you go in, they'll actually have you sign a lien letter saying that you give them rights to have a lien against any kind of recovery you might have for the injury they're treating you for. That's usually in the large stack of papers that you sign at the outset whenever you go in. And those can actually be recoverable against the attorney for the plaintiff as well, if they don't actually protect those liens, as long as they're put on notice of them. So that's why it's always important for attorneys to make sure there aren't any liens out there before they settle these cases.
Well, that's always good to do your due diligence and do a title search or a lien search or whatever it is.
Now, whenever cases are settled, the other thing that goes in hand in hand with these are called releases. And a release is, you know what a release is, right?
Oh, yeah. That's when you catch a fish, but you can't keep them. So you have to release it back into the pond.
That would be a release. I need to be much more specific when I ask these questions to you. Do you know what a release is in the spectrum of lawsuits and insurance?
Is that like a hold harmless?
There could be a hold harmless clause in there.
Yeah.
So a release would typically state that in exchange for the payment which you are receiving, you agree to release the insurance company and they're insured for the acts that you're pursuing them for. And oftentimes the language will say something along the lines of, for any and all acts from the beginning of time to these days present. That's always
so. In other words, you're going to take this check, that's it, and you're agreeing, you ain't going to ask for any more.
Exactly. This is it. This is all you're going to get.
Yeah, so be careful before you sign on that line. Make sure you're covered. Make sure you don't have one of those hidden injuries.
That's right. And the releases almost always say something in there about having to satisfy any subrogation interests. So they'll outline who might have a subrogation interest and how that money is going to be paid. They'll talk about having to satisfy any kind of medical liens and how that's going to be paid and everything along those lines. And oftentimes they'll ask that a copy of the check that is used to pay those liens off and the subrogation things be sent to that insurance company so they can keep track of it, make sure that it was taken care of as agreed to.
Okay.
Now, the other thing that can happen, which you kind of touched on a little bit, is that there can be indemnity and hold harmless agreements stuck into these releases as well. And this means that if the person who's receiving the settlement does not pay the medical lien or the subrogation like they're supposed to, and then the insurance company ends up getting sued, that the person who received the settlement will come to the defense and indemnify and hold harmless the insurance company. So they'll actually kind of step back into the shoes of the insurance company and be the ones who are going to defend them because it's their responsibility to pay those.
Hmm.
So does that make sense?
Well, I guess so.
If we say, okay, there's a lien out there for $15,000 and that I'm going to give you a settlement for $100,000. And as part of that settlement agreement, you agree to satisfy that $15,000 lien, and you sign that you agree to indemnify and hold me harmless for it. And then I give you the $100,000 and you don't pay it. And then that person comes and sues me for it. Then you're the one who's going to have to bear the responsibility for that because agreed to indemnify and hold me harmless.
Sure.
Because you were supposed to do that.
All right. I got it now.
Yeah. And so, the other person.
So I just tell you to pass that lien on me.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'll pay your bill.
And oftentimes the way these work is that the release will be sent over to the counsel for the plaintiff with a check. And then the plaintiff will sign the release. So then the attorney will put that check into their trust account. And then it's up to that attorney for the plaintiff to go ahead and write out all the checks how they're supposed to. A certain amount goes to the client, a certain amount goes to them, a certain amount goes to pay all the outstanding liens. They're kind of doing an accounting and resolving everything. So that can be where the plaintiff's attorney's liability can come into play too, if they don't do what they're supposed to with all that money.
Right. So they have to pay off the liens or whoever's involved, and they can't just keep any extra for themselves.
Exactly. And if they don't do what they're supposed to, then that opens them up for liability or possibly a malpractice claim. There can be a malpractice claim against an attorney for not taking care of all the liens like they're supposed to. So whenever you're the plaintiff's counsel and you have a settlement check that comes in, you always do, well, I always did, and it's a great idea to, and some states require you to, do what's called a settlement statement, where you break down exactly what it is that you're getting in and where every single dollar is going. Then you have your client sign that so they understand where everything's going, and then you follow through with that, and then you don't have any problems. So
yeah, because if they come back and say later, I didn't know that, they say, well, what'd you sign that for then, dummy?
Yeah, pretty much.
Look right here. Isn't that your John Hancock?
That's your Herbie Hancock right there? So whenever you have multiple insurance companies and multiple liens and all those kinds of things, it can get pretty complicated, and it becomes a bit of a job to try to figure it out. And also, your attorney, if you hire a counsel as a plaintiff, that's your attorney's job to take care of all that for you and sort through it and to make sure to try to get those liens and subrogation things lowered so you get more recovery in your pocket. And a lot of times people don't understand what actually an attorney for a plaintiff does to earn their money, but that's kind of what they do. They're getting more money for you generally, and they're making sure that it all goes where it needs to so you don't have liability later, and they're oftentimes negotiating down the amount of medical bills and other kinds of offsets for it. So
yeah, because otherwise, I mean, if you're the client and you're wanting to be made whole, if you had $20,000 worth of medical bills, so you sued for $20,000 and you got it, well, by the time you paid the lawyer and stuff, you still are out money for your medical bills you shouldn't have had to have.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is there ever a situation where you can settle it and have, you know, court costs on top of it or lawyer fees or whatever?
Well, you can get attorney's fees in certain circumstances if there's any kind of punitive damages, like there was some sort of malicious or wrongful wrongdoing. You can get extra money that way.
Like if a guy ran over you and then backed up.
Well, that'd probably be punitive damage worthy. And then also you can get attorney's fees if there's some sort of statute that allows it. One that comes to mind is consumer protection. There's generally attorney's fees provisions in those. The other way you can kind of get attorney's fees, and they don't do this in West Virginia, is that if you have a proposal for settlement where you have sued somebody and you basically file a proposal for settlement saying, I will settle this case right now for $25,000. And there's a certain way you have to go about doing it to do it. And then if the defendant rejects that and then you recover that $25,000 or more, then you get your attorney's fees on top of it. Likewise, you can do that for the defense side and say, we offer to settle this case for $25,000. And if the plaintiff's attorney decides not to do that, or plaintiff decides not to do that, and they don't recover at least $25,000, then the defendant gets their attorney's fees back. So it's a good system. And I kind of wish that more states had it, actually.
You know what that reminds me of?
What's that?
Buying turnips on Animals Crossing. You buy them and then you look to see if you can sell them for that higher price somewhere.
That's funny.
I don't have the advantages, though, that like Justin does. Justin puts out there that he's famous. So he puts out there that he needs to sell turnips. Who's got a good price? And he gets different fans that say, come to my island. They're giving $600 a turnip today. So he'll go there and leave with $1 million.
Well, people probably just want to say, I have a turnip that was formerly owned by Justin McElroy. This turnip's worth more.
That's right. But he's gaming that thing, man. That's not right. I stay on my own little island and buy and sell my turnips. I don't even fool with it anymore. I can't stand to look at that snotty-nosed pig that sells them.
You're just a simple turnip salesman.
Yeah, I'm a very simple turnip salesman. I'm a trader in it. You know, just like pork bellies and lemon futures or whatever it is they do.
Was it the orange futures in Trading Places?
Yeah, yeah.
The citrus report?
Yeah.
What's the turnip report looking like on Animal Crossing?
It's not looking good. I don't like that. They charge you too much, and it worries me. All week long, I'm worried about, am I going to hit the right price? And there's a different price in the morning than there is in the evening. And I can't put in that kind of time. Playing Animal Crossing is like having a second job. It's too much work.
Oh, so what do you think? Are you ready to jump in the world of subrogation and insurance liens?
No, I don't like fooling with any of that stuff because I always feel like I end up on the wrong end of that deal. I mean, anytime you get involved in an insurance situation, like with your car or something like that, especially if your car is totaled, you know, they total your car and say, well, it was worth $5,000. Here's $5,000. Well, A, you can't replace it for that. And B, it was worth a hell of a lot more than $5,000 to me.
Right.
So you end up losing out on that every time.
Oh, absolutely. There's no winning when your car gets totaled out like that.
No. I'm like almost willing to say, look, just all you got to do is just pay the repair bill. I'll pay the difference. You pay the $5,000, I'll pay the rest. And they're like, no, we can't do that. Those rules are so stupid. If you're willing to relieve them of it and sign something and saying, you know, I'm doing that, then you should be able to. But it's against the law. You can't do it.
The deck stacked against the common man.
That's right. And I'm as common as they come. I'm just not as famous as common.
Well, I think that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where I ask Tommy different legal questions regarding the stuff we talked about today.
I wish you'd ask me some illegal ones sometimes. I might know more of those.
Some illegal ones?
Yeah. I run with a rough crowd.
Say you are in the leftmost lane of a one-way street. Can you make a left on red onto another one-way street?
Not if it's into traffic. You have to be going with traffic.
What do you mean?
Well, if the one way is coming at you. if it's going the way you're turning. But if it's coming at you, no.
Well, did you think this was some sort of trick question? Like,
yeah, I did. Coming from you, you're a lawyer. I expected it to be a trick question. That's why I got to examine all the angles.
Well, I'll give it. You got me there, Tommy. no, I was indeed referring to turning into a one-way street with traffic going the same way.
Yeah, well, I think you can do that.
Yeah, I think you can too, but just throwing that out there.
Well, all right. Well, there's your tip for the day, but don't do it because we might be wrong. Check your state laws and driving rules. Although I have heard that it is the same as a right on red, but I don't know that for a fact. I don't think I'd even test it. I think I would sit there and wait for the light to change. I don't want to be responsible for a vehicular death.
That's right. Okay, so on to the actual questions. You got to know what the first one is. What is subrogation?
Subrogation is the part where, like, if you get an insurance settlement for damages and the insurance has already paid you part of that, they get their money back.
Yes. But what it describes is the right the insurance company has to be made whole and to go after a third party who caused the loss to them.
Yeah, most insurance companies are a whole.
And what is a lien?
What is a lien? That is a house that was built on a poor foundation.
That works.
A lien means somebody, you owe somebody money, and there's a signed amount there that you have agreed to, and a lien has to be paid off before other money can be released.
Yep, and oftentimes that happens in the context of medical bills. Whenever there's a settlement from an accident, the medical bills have to be satisfied. The medical lien has to be taken care of before the person can receive their check for their settlement.
That's right, and you don't want to have anybody leaning on you.
Nope, unless they're not strong.
And then you'll be there to help them carry on.
That's right. And the next question is, what is indemnity?
Indemnity, that means that you don't have to do nothing because you have indemnity. You indemnified someone that they don't have to worry about it.
That's right. And another term that's used often hand-in-hand with that is duty to defend.
Duty. Defend them with duty.
And the duty to defend basically means that you not only would you indemnify them, but you would have to defend them from any kind of claim that comes forward. So they're kind of two separate things there, even though indemnity and duty to defend usually kind of go hand in hand.
Okay. I will exercise my duty to defend when I indemnify.
That sounded very, very legal.
That's right. It's kind of superhero-like, isn't it? That's kind of like what a lawyer is anyway, is a superhero with a briefcase.
Or an attaché case.
Well, an attaché case, that's what a spy carries around.
Yeah.
That's what Dane used to carry. Plant the bombs. Plant the bombs.
Dane was a pretty intense kid.
I know.
He's a pretty intense dude these days, too.
That was our nephew.
Yeah. Well, that's going to do it for Legal Briefs. I think you did pretty well there. I mean, you picked up on these insurance terms pretty quickly.
Well, what I guess I didn't realize, I wasn't really familiar with the terms, but what I didn't realize is I have been subrogated by them several times. Once I hear how they're used, I've been involved in several of those instances.
Not only have you been subrogated, you've been subjugated.
Yeah.
Suffocated.
Syncopated. I've seen a house fly, and I've seen a horse fly, but I've never seen an elephant fly.
What?
I don't know. That was syncopated. I don't know.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, still buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out, though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello. This is a footnote for today's random thought. I recorded this on Wednesday afternoon, prior to the protests that started happening on Thursday, so if it seems like I'm talking around a subject, it's because I recorded this prior to what took place. Thank you. Hello, and welcome to Tommy's Random Thought. Today's random thought is the rise of the Karens. It seems we have a whole new class of person that represents the worst of us all, Karens. We have barbecue Karens and water bottle Karens, Central Park Karens, and parking lot Karens. Karens are defined as white, privileged women who believe they are entitled to do whatever they want and that everyone else should bow to their obvious superiority. They can make or break whatever rules they want because they are, well, a Karen. If you are a Karen and you see a group of African Americans having a barbecue, well, of course you call the police, because there is something inside of you that says, this can't be right. Who do they think they are having a barbecue like that, right out here where people can see them? This has to be against the law. If you are Karen and an 8-year-old African American girl is selling bottles of water along a sidewalk, you are outraged, and you go and you yell at the little girl that she needs a permit, and you demand to see this permit. Then you call the police on the child to teach her a lesson. Imagine the gall of an 8-year-old selling bottles of water without a permit. Thank God Karen is on top of things. I wonder if Karen would have been so outraged if it had been a little white girl selling lemonade in a white suburban neighborhood. Another thing that Karens don't like is if you are a person of color and you point out that Karen may be breaking a law, like not having her dog on a leash, when there is a well-known leash law that applies to everyone. Except, apparently, Karen. So what does she do? Instead of putting the leash on, which is in her hand, she moves aggressively at the person videoing her to the point he is telling her not to come any closer. So Karen calls the police and says that she is being attacked by an African-American man. Fortunately, this is all on video. All of these incidents have one main thing in common. These Karens are using the police as a weapon against African Americans. They feel that if it comes down to her word against that of a person of color, then of course the police will side with her, no matter how ridiculous she is being. The bottom line is, there is already a big difference between how police approach people of color as opposed to white people. These Karens are only fanning those flames and making things worse. The thing is, justice is supposed to be blind. It shouldn't see color, because laws or rules should be applied the same for everyone. I think that America has reached its tipping point on this inequality in our enforcement of the law, and something is going to change. I don't know how, and I don't know by whom, but if enough of us could say that enough is enough, maybe we can find a place to start. In the meantime, let's continue to shine the light of humiliation on all the Karens out there that need to know what real justice is about. This has been Tommy's Random Thought.